The signal for the start of one high school class in Birmingham, Alabama, is not the traditional school bell, but the red light that signifies you're on the air. At 9 o'clock every Saturday morning, the students of this class, in cooperation with station WAPI, Columbia's affiliate in Birmingham, present their own original half-hour broadcasts. Dealing with subjects the students are working on in school, the programs have become an important supplement to classroom lessons in history, geography, current events, and music. Every step in the programs is handled by the students themselves, ranging from research and writing to the actual acting and announcing in WAPI studios. And best of all, many students who somehow never got around to trying for an A are now working overtime to hear the director say after the show, "All right, cast, swell performance." Probably one of the best stories about getting started in radio is that told by Jim Amici, narrator of Columbia's daily serial Big Sister and host every Thursday evening over CBS on the Romance, Rhythm, and Ripley program. It happened in Chicago back in the days when Jim was just out of school. His brother, Don Amici, was already firmly established as a radio star, but Jim, as yet, just hadn't been able to get his first break. Bert, the youngest of the three Amici brothers, was a young man who delighted in playing jokes on his brothers, particularly on Jim.
If you could have seen Jim's face, Mom. He looked as though he was going to kill me.
Really?
Well, you'll never know how close I came to it. Now, can you imagine, Mom? There we were, right in the middle of the best restaurant in Chicago, when the cigarette he just gave me started to explode.
But it didn't explode just once, Mom. It went off 5 different times. Hmm. You can't imagine how funny it was.
How long did it take you to think that joke up, Bert?
Oh, a long time, Mom. I had to send away to New York for a very special trick cigarette. The ones I could find in Chicago only exploded once.
Well, if you keep this up, Bert, one of these days I'm going to explode. And believe me, I won't have to do it 5 different times.
Hey, Mom, where's Jim, do you know?
He just went outside a second ago. He was going to play tennis.
Thanks, Mom. Hey, Jim!
What's the matter?
Wait a minute!
What's up, Bert?
Don just called you from the CBS studios.
Yeah?
He says he thinks they have a part for you and to get over there right away.
Are you kidding?
Look, you better not stand here and waste time. You'd better hurry.
Oh, but I've got to change my clothes.
There isn't enough time. Hurry up.
Okay, but if this is a joke, Bert, it's the last one you'll ever pull. You mean you didn't phone me at all, Don?
No, I don't know anything about it. Who do you suppose phoned?
I have a pretty good idea.
You mean this is another of Bert's gags?
Yeah, I'm afraid it is. But it's the last one I'm ever going to fall for.
Gosh, I'm sorry, Jim. I wish there were some openings.
Oh, that's okay, Don.
But I'll tell you what. As long as you're here, why don't you come in and see the new program director? At least you can read for him, and when a part comes up you could play, maybe he'll remember you.
Well, after that trick Bert pulled on me, there's one part I could really play well. A first-class sucker. Ready?
Yeah.
Hey, Jim! Jim, come here!
What's the matter?
Forget your tennis, hurry up!
Look, Bert, I'm right in the middle of the set.
Listen, Jim. Don just called. They want you over at CBS right away. They have a part for you.
I thought you promised you'd cut out this practical joking.
I'm not joking. This is on the level.
Sure. Get out of my way, will you? I'm serving. Ready?
This is your big chance, Jim. The one you've been waiting for.
I've been made a sucker before, but this time I'm not biting.
But I promised Don you'd get right over. Now, come on, Jim.
Will you get out of my way?
You're going over there if I have to drag you every inch of the way.
Oh, no, I'm not.
Look, Jim. You've got to get over to CBS, and you've got to get over soon. You have to believe me.
I don't. But we'll both go over. And if this isn't on the level, they'll have to carry one of us out.
Ready?
I'll say it's on the level, Jim. Here, grab the script. You're on the air in 10 minutes.
Well, what part am I playing?
You're playing the lead.
Are you kidding?
No. Remember the day Bert sent you over here as a joke?
Yeah.
Well, the director you met that day wants you for the leading man in the serial.
Oh, boy.
Jim, you're in radio.
I don't know how to thank
you.
No. If it hadn't been for you, I never would have had this part.
Oh, look
here. Have a cigar. You deserve it, kid.
Oh, thanks.
Here, light.
Yeah.
Look, go on. Smoke up. You know, gave me my first break in radio. Naturally, you do. Some kind of reward.
Say.
Go ahead.
Say, this
Cigar tastes sort of strange.
Oh, no, no. Take a good long puff.
Okay. Yeah. Well, you gave me a trick cigar.
I'll say I did. And from now on, you'd better watch out. After what practical joking did for me, Bert, I've decided to go in for it myself.
Maybe I'll get a radio job.
Well, all joking aside, that was just the beginning for Jim Amici. From that time on, he went ahead rapidly in radio work, until today he's often cast on dramatic programs over CBS and as narrator on Columbia's daytime serial, Big Sister, and host of the Romance, Rhythm, and Ripley program.
And that's Behind the Scenes at CBS. Be with us again next week at this time when your favorite Columbia station will bring you another intimate glimpse into the colorful world of radio with baritone Earl Wrightson of the Family Hour as our guest and Don Baker as our guide.
Recently on Columbia's Service to the Front program, an Army sergeant who was a guest on the show was so nervous that the director was surprised he managed to talk at all. Afterwards, the curious director asked the sergeant, "If you're so scared of being on the radio, why did you volunteer to be on this show?" "Volunteer nothing," answered the sergeant. "My major ordered me to come up here tonight." And this is Don Baker saying good listening.
And this is Joe Week saying this is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System. Behind the Scenes at CBS, a backstage close-up of Columbia stars and the inside stories of radio with Don Baker as your guide and columnist of the air. In a moment, you'll hear a chat with one of your favorite singers, Bob Hannon, and a story about Jane Pickens, both starred on Columbia's American Melody Hour. And now, Behind the Scenes at CBS with Don Baker.
Behind the scenes at CBS, I found out about a treasure hunt which has lasted for 100 years. It began in 1840 with the death of the almost legendary violinist, Paganini. His four priceless Stradivari instruments, a viola, cello, and two violins, which he'd made famous as the Paganini Quartet, were sold separately after his death to collectors in different parts of the world. For many years, Emil Herrmann, the owner of many of the Stradivari you hear on Columbia's Sunday program, the Stradivari Orchestra, has dreamed of reuniting these instruments. When a famous European family who owned the viola and the cello were forced into exile by the war, they finally consented to sell their two instruments. A private collector in New York who owned one of the violins finally yielded to Mr. Herman's pleas to sell after almost a decade. When the owner of the remaining violin died, his will stated that his violin couldn't be sold for 15 years. Well, just recently, the 15 years were up. And this coming Sunday on the Stradivari Orchestra program, you'll actually be able to hear the Paganini Quartet, the first time that anybody has heard it for more than 100 years. Actor Jimmy Monks, who is heard regularly on many CBS programs, is only 29 years old. But strangely enough, for the past few weeks, he's found himself cast first as a middle-aged man, and then as an 80-year-old character, and finally on the serial Light of the World as a man 100 years old. Well, just the other day, he got a call from a director who said, "Hurry up over to the studio, Jimmy. For a change, I've got a young part for you." Well, he was young, all right. And when Jimmy got to the studio, he discovered he was playing a 16-year-old boy. Behind the scenes at CBS, singer Bob Hannon just arrived at our studio a few minutes ago from a bang-up celebration of the fourth anniversary on the air of the American Melody Hour. Well, Bob and his co-stars on the show, Jane Pickens and Evelyn McGregor, are three good reasons why the candles on the program's birthday cake were burning so brightly tonight. All I can say is I hope the cake was as smooth, tasty, and enjoyable as the program itself.
Well, you can take my word for it, Don. That cake was something. We ate every bit of it except the candles.
Well, what made you stop there?
We're saving them for next year. We're going to keep adding a candle a year until there just isn't room on any cake to hold any more.
Well, what do you do then?
Well, instead of adding new candles, we'll just start burning them at both ends, I guess.
Well, I hope I'm around to see that.
Hope I am, too, because burning the candle at both ends is one of my specialties.
Well, how long has this been going on?
Oh, since I was about 10.
How did you burn the candle at both ends at the age of 10?
By singing in a boys' choir in Kansas City.
I see.
Believe me, going to school all week and singing in that choir kept me pretty busy.
So that's what you call burning the candle at both ends, huh?
Mm-hmm. And that was just the beginning. By the time I was 12, I was really going at it in a big way. I was going to school for half a day, playing in vaudeville, and singing with dance bands at night. And in the afternoon, I was a salesman down at the dime store.
Well, at least that job was a change from your other jobs, wasn't it?
Well, not much. You see, I was selling music. I did everything from singing the songs to wrapping up the sheet music for customers and ringing up the sales.
Well, what I want to know, Bob, is how you managed to do all those things and keep on in school.
Well, I didn't. They tolerated me around school for a while because I sang at school entertainments and in the high school operettas. But finally the principal said, "All right, Bob, you don't care about anything but singing. You better go ahead and do it."
You left school?
I left town. I got a job plugging songs. First in vaudeville, and then in theater lobbies while people were waiting to get in to see a movie.
Mm-hmm.
I sang a song and tried to sell the sheet music at the same time.
Well, how'd you make out as a salesman?
Well, I'll let you decide, Don. Can I use this piano?
Sure. Go ahead.
Well, there I was, a little kid who'd never been east of Chicago in my life, and here's how it sounded. I just got in from New York, folks, and here's the song that's sweeping the city. Two tickets to Georgia, how much do I pay? Two tickets to Georgia, okay, GA. Step up, folks, and buy your copy right now before they're all gone. Get the latest song that I can personally guarantee is the hit of the Great White Way. Two tickets to Georgia, how much do I pay? Two tickets to Georgia, okay, GA. Do you get the idea, Don?
And how? Well, you certainly were enthusiastic, weren't you?
If you think that was enthusiastic, you should have heard me when I first started trying to sing serious music about that time.
How's that?
Oh, how I put my heart into that. I'd wring the last tear out of every note. Redipiaccio, sotto amore in fronto.
Stop, Bob. You're breaking my heart.
Well, that's the way everybody felt. So I decided to stick to popular music for the time being, and I became a singing guitarist.
You did, huh?
My first steady job was with Clyde McCoy. And after that, I played with Harry Sosnick and Henry Bussey, Wayne King, Buddy Rogers, and just about any big-name band you can think of.
As a singing guitarist?
No, I dropped the guitar after a while, and I went with Paul Whiteman as a straight singer. And I haven't used the guitar since then.
Well, you certainly have done a lot of different kinds of singing, Bob. What kind do you like best?
Oh, I don't know. I like singing just about anything, as long as I can relax and just sing it straightforward.
Well, how do you mean?
Well, I like doing the kind of songs we have on the American Melody Hour. Smooth and easygoing numbers.
For instance?
Well, suppose I say it in music. This is one of the songs we featured on the show this week. Though we are oceans apart, you're never out of my heart. I simply close my eyes and there you are.
Nice going, Bob. You like singing songs like that, and we love hearing them. It's a perfect combination. A combination that's helping to make the American Melody Hour one of the most tuneful musical shows on the air.
When I pretend you're there and there,
Columbia's Sunday program, New Voices in Song, has a rule. It's this. You must be new to radio. You must never have sung before over any network. In fact, the program is designed to give new singers who've proven their worth in a CBS audition a chance to be heard on the air. The results are often like a Hollywood Cinderella story. Concert engagements, roles in operettas, and other radio appearances have followed for many of the singers. One of them, soprano Evelyn Pazin, was so well received that she now has her own CBS program. Another singer, Catherine Berberian, has just received a gift which will enable her to study with the finest voice teachers in the country for all of next year. Her benefactor, a CBS listener who heard her on New Voices in Song. One singer who often accompanies herself on the piano and also uses several different pianists from time to time is Jane Pickens of the American Melody Hour. At the present moment, there are five players, each with his own particular specialty, who work with her at different times in concerts, nightclub engagements, and on the air. But when she was first beginning to sing solo some years ago, Jane shopped around for a long time to find an accompanist. One day, a musician named Ray Gold walked in, sat down at the piano, and played his way into a job. Although Jane likes to write her own arrangements, Ray worked up some distinctive numbers himself, which were so good that audiences loved them. He worked with Jane for some time until one day when they were playing in the Middle West.
What's the matter, Ray? You look as though someone just hit you over the head.
Yeah, somebody just did.
Oh, who? He can't get away with it.
Oh, yes, he can, Jane. It was the President of the United States. He just sent me his greetings.
Oh, Ray, you mean...
That's right. Looks as though I'm in the Army. Gosh, I hope the train isn't late.
Uh-huh.
Even if it isn't, I'll just make it to my draft board in New York by the skin of my teeth.
Well, they certainly can't blame you. Ray, it just took the letter a long time to catch up with you.
Yeah, I guess so. I'm so worried about just leaving you like this, Jane.
Oh, now you stop worrying. I know a couple of accompanists I think I can get their work out.
Yeah, but what are you going to do about Stardust and the five or six other specialty numbers like that?
I'll manage.
Oh, we've worked up such unusual arrangements for them.
I know,
and the piano parts are so tricky.
But
maybe you won't be able to do them so well with another piano.
Well, I just won't sing them until you get back.
Oh, gosh, if I only had a couple of days in New York instead of just a few hours. Just to bang them out on the piano and put them down on paper.
Oh, I wonder what ever happened to the original arrangements.
I can't remember, can you?
Nope. Wait a second, I do remember.
You do?
I think I left him in New York with my mother.
You did?
Ray, that solves everything.
Oh, sure. Any pianist will be able to read that music.
Then I'll just pick him up when I get to New York in a couple of months.
Oh, gosh, that makes me feel better. Now I can stop worrying.
Of course you can.
So what am I saying? Well, now I can stop worrying about music and start worrying about the Army.
Jane?
Oh, just some music, Mother. Some arrangements I'd like to use tonight at the stage door canteen.
Did you look inside in the studio?
Mm-hmm. But they aren't there.
Well, I don't know where else they could be.
Wait a second, I know. They were with that big batch of old music we sent down to the basement.
But I thought you decided you didn't need any of that music. You told me to do whatever I wanted with it.
Yes, I know, but I didn't have any idea I'd ever need that music again. Oh, I do hope it's still around, even though my arranger did go to war.
I'm afraid it isn't, Jane. Your arrangement went to war, too.
Well, what do you mean?
I didn't think you needed any of that music, so I gave it to the paper salvage drive.
Now, wait a minute, fellas. Will you take it easy? All right, fellas. All right. Have a heart, will you? Now, look, fellas, we don't want the stage door canteen to be responsible for making Miss Pickens lose her voice, do we? She's already sung seven songs.
Oh, wait a minute, fellas, please. Quiet down, Emma.
What do you say, Miss Pickens? You came for another song?
Yes, of course I am. Okay, fellas, what would you like?
In my follicle. In my follicle.
One at a time, will you?
In my follicle.
One at a time.
Solitude.
Cut it out, solitude. Miss Pickens can't sing all those at once. Hey, how about you, Sailor? What would you like to hear?
My favorite song is Stardust.
In my solitude.
Stardust. Can you sing Stardust, Miss Pickens?
Well, I'll try, but I'm afraid it won't be as good as I'd like it to be. You see, I lost my arrangement of that song and the pianist who arranged it.
Oh, no, you didn't, Jane.
Ray!
Wait a second, I'm coming right up.
Oh, wait a second.
No,
What do you think you're doing there? You can't come up here on the stage.
Oh, no, who says I can't?
If he won't hear Stardust, you better let him up.
What do you mean?
I mean, some people lose their hearts at the stage door canteen, but I've found my arranger.
In my
Thank you. Private Ray Gold, who had just come into New York on a weekend pass a half hour before, sat down and played his original arrangement of Stardust while Jane sang for the servicemen at the stage door canteen. And for the next couple of weeks, he spent a lot of his free moments banging away on the piano at the USO Club in the camp where he was stationed, putting the arrangements down on paper. A few weeks later, a packet arrived for Jane. It was the entire missing group of arrangements written for her by Private First Class Ray Gold, a first-class arranger.
And that's Behind the Scenes at CBS. Be with us again next week at this time when your favorite Columbia station will bring you another intimate glimpse into the colorful world of radio with Bob Dixon, master of ceremonies of Hobby Lobby, as our guest, and Don Baker as our guide.
It happened some months ago, but because of military security, the story has just reached us. It seems that a B-29 was hit on a raid over Japan and its navigating equipment smashed. But the Super Fort was able to get back to its base safely. It tuned in on an OWI transmitter on Saipan, which was broadcasting programs to the soldiers, and rode the transmitter's beam right to the landing field. The program that brought them safely home was a broadcast of songs by Kate Smith and Frank Sinatra. Now, this is Don Baker saying, this is good listening.
And this is Joe Weeks saying, this is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Here's a note on the dresser.
Let me have it. Dear Daddy. Dear Daddy.
Important issues of the day. Tonight, Representative Charles A. Halleck, Republican of Indiana, spoke on the challenge to Americans. Next Tuesday night, Columbia will bring you another member of Congress discussing an outstanding government problem. Listen again next Tuesday night at the same time to hear what goes on in Washington when Congress speaks. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Behind the Scenes at CBS. A backstage close-up of Columbia's stars and the inside stories of radio with Ted Husing as your guide and columnist of the air. In a moment, you'll hear a chat with radio's most distinguished impersonator, Private Art Carney, and a story about Columbia's singing star, Jimmy Carroll. And now, behind the scenes at CBS with Ted Husing.
For over 3 years now, police cars on the air have had to overtake speeding motorists and escaping gunmen without the benefit of a sound effect siren. Because the wail of a siren might easily have been mistaken for an air raid alarm, radio's code of wartime practices forbade its use on the air, and Columbia has always taken pains to use substitute effects, even on programs dramatizing a prison break or an air raid itself. But with the end of the war in Europe, many of radio's behind-the-scenes restrictions have been lifted. Local stations may now play musical requests on specific shows, broadcast lost and found announcements, and permit man-on-the-street interviews, all previously banned because of the danger of furnishing spies with a means of communication. And now that the lid is off, ambulances and fire engines will once again race through the air with their former authenticity. Behind the scenes at CBS, there's a group of young women who know the solution of every mystery show, the gag line of every joke, and the twist ending of every story long before it goes on the air. Collectively, they are known as the program typing department, and through their busy typewriters pass every script that goes on the air. These girls work in shifts, 7 days a week, from early morning to late at night, turning out the volumes of copy which are used daily in 24 hours of broadcasting. And radio being what it is, with unavoidable emergencies arising at the very last minute, Columbia's typists have become expert at turning out clear, accurate copy at a moment's notice. A case in point being a recent broadcast of a show to which a last-minute news item had been added just before airtime. The page was stenciled, mimeographed, and returned to the studio in the short space of 4 minutes. The program it happened on? Behind the Scenes at CBS. If you've ever heard Franklin D. Roosevelt, Winston Churchill, or Wendell Willkie impersonated on the air, the chances are you heard the voice of the young soldier who stands before me now, Private Art Carney. Private Carney, who used to play GIs on Columbia's Report to the Nation, and the man behind the gun before he assumed the role in real life, is one of radio's outstanding impersonators. And as such, he can be called upon to play a straight part or imitate the voice of almost anybody. Say, tell me, Art, just how do you do it?
Well, it's not exactly a magician's trick, Ted. Some of my voices may sound as if I pulled them out of a hat, but they don't always come out that easily.
Well, how do they come?
Well, some of them are more or less spontaneous, especially when the person I imitate has a very definite style. Well, like Victor Moore's.
I went to just one of his movies, and when I came out, I found I could say his lines almost the way he said them. Maybe not exactly like him, but almost.
Almost? Hey, if you'd seen that movie two more times, you probably would have been Victor Moore. Did you cover many newsreels when you were doing your impersonations on Report to the Nation, Art?
Well, I practically memorized some of them, especially Winston Churchill's. Remember his famous words when things were so bad in the early days of the war?
Never in the field of human conflict was so much owed by so many to so few.
Well, what do you do when you have to impersonate somebody you've never seen on the screen?
Well, the next best thing is to get a record of his voice and listen to it over and over again, which is what I did on Report to the Nation when I had to play Elmer Davis.
That deliberate Midwestern manner of speaking he has was familiar to CBS listeners because he used to be a news analyst on Columbia. So therefore, I had to be very careful about catching his style.
Brother, that's a beautiful catch. But tell me, Art, what's the process involved in deliberately setting out to capture another man's voice?
Well, I think the main thing is to be able to hear that voice in your mind, Ted. I know when I start to impersonate somebody, well, somebody like Jimmy Stewart, for instance, I hear his voice mentally and see him in my mind's eye. And, well, then the first thing you know, I'm just sort of talking like him. And it seems just like the most natural thing in the world. It's just the most natural thing in the world.
Yes, it seems like the most natural thing in the world for you. You know what, every time I try it, it still comes out Ted Husing. I'd like to know how you started this very pleasant habit of impersonating people. Did you make like Maurice Chevalier when you were a child?
No, I never did that, Ted. But when I was in high school, I wasn't above making my teachers out to be grouches like Ned Sparks.
And I'm telling you, it's a good thing they never caught me at it. Otherwise, I might have been known as Laughing Boy.
Did you imitate anybody else in high school?
Oh, well, in those days, you just couldn't be an impersonator unless you did Edward G. Robinson, yes.
He wouldn't take any guff from anybody, see? He was a little seasoned, and that's all there was to it, see? Yeah,
I see. I'd hate to get a telephone call from you on April Fool's Day. That's all I know.
Oh, I wouldn't say that, Dr. Kildare. Now, if there's anything I can't tolerate in a young man, it's impulsiveness. Mark my words, Kildare. Snap decisions will be the bane of your existence.
Let's get back to your existence, Lionel. I mean, Art. Say, after high school, did you go right into radio or a sanitarium?
No, I got a job with Harsight's Orchestra.
Same thing.
And after that, I worked in vaudeville and nightclubs.
Impersonating?
Mm-hmm.
Whom? No, oh, wait a minute. Don't tell me. Jimmy Durante?
Are you kidding, Umbriago? I couldn't imitate Durante if I was down to my last vocal cord. And I practically am.
Is there anything you can't do?
Well, yes, Ted, Fred Allen. But of course, that's because I've got flat feet. As Fred once says, my feet are so flat, my socks are baggy at the arches.
All right, I'll bet you had the army in stitches with some of these routines. Did you put on many shows for the boys?
No, not very many, Ted.
Hmm.
When I went in, they were getting things ready for D-Day, and there wasn't much time for fooling around.
Hmm.
But I did manage to do a little entertaining during basic training.
Well, which of your impressions did the men like the best?
Well, I don't know. I used to have a lot of fun imitating the Aldrich family.
The whole family?
No, just Mr. Aldrich, Henry, and Homer.
Oh, brother, this I've got to hear. Carry on, Homer.
Well, gee, Ted, you don't have to push me into it like I was standing on the edge of a swimming pool or something. Gee whiz, you don't even give me a chance to get my feet wet.
Now, now, Homer, Mr. Husing has a perfect right to call on you without making elaborate preparations. After all, you're not Henry.
I, Father? What did I do? I was just standing here minding my own business.
That's just it, Henry. You shouldn't be. Now, your mother's calling you.
I, Father? Me? Oh. Oh, gee whiz. Coming, Mother!
Many thanks to Private Art Carney for a superlative demonstration of why he was known as radio's most talented actor impersonator before he went into service. Private Carney, who wears a Purple Heart and a combat star for serving with the infantry on Normandy when the going was tough, is one man who will have no trouble finding work in radio when Uncle Sam no longer has work for him in the United States Army. For moviegoers who don't like to miss the latest news bulletins while they're away from their radios, station WDAE, Columbia's affiliate in Tampa, Florida, has dreamed up a novel solution. By special arrangement with the Tampa Theater, to which it has a private telephone line, WDAE summarizes the latest news for the theater audience after each showing of the newsreel. So don't be surprised if somebody from Tampa tells you he went to the movies to hear the news. What are you doing for victory is a provocative question down in Louisville, Kentucky, where station WHAS, a CBS affiliate, received a variety citation for its fascinating daily answers. In interviews with hundreds of people who had taken on wartime occupations, this morale-building series has questioned many an interesting subject, from the 4-year-old who lisped that his mummy was making boats, to the 85-year-old woman who shouted the praises of home nursing so loud it almost blew the station off the air. One Sunday night some 6 months ago, when a sudden attack of laryngitis kept James Melton from appearing on Columbia Star Theater, an unknown singer chosen from the program's chorus took his place, and a star was born, Jimmy Carroll. But as long as Jimmy Carroll sings on his new Monday, Wednesday, and Friday night series, or any other program, he'll never forget how close he came to missing the big break that got him started. You see, it seems that just a few days before the break came, Jimmy, who was a regular member of the Star Theater's choir, auditioned for a job in the quartet of another show and won the audition. Naturally, he was pleased to have an additional program which didn't conflict with his Sunday night show. But when the director of the quartet finished rehearsal one night and informed him...
All right, boys. That's all for tonight. Rehearsal Sunday night at 7:45.
Ted, excuse me. Did you say rehearsal was Sunday night?
That's right, Jimmy. We're having our dress on Sunday night this week.
Oh, but the broadcast is on Monday, isn't it?
Well, it's a new show, Jimmy, and I want to leave myself a day of grace. You know, just to make sure everything will be all right.
Well, does it have to be on Sunday? I mean...
What's the matter? Can't you make it?
Well, sure.
Now, look, this is an important rehearsal Sunday, Jimmy, and if you can't make it, you better not do the show.
Oh, I can make it all right. I mean, I think I can. All I have to do is get a substitute for the Star Theater.
But look, Jimmy, this is pretty short notice for me to get another tenor for Sunday night. You know, the trouble we had the night Carter couldn't make it.
Oh, but this is my big chance, Pete. I'll be singing in a quartet on this show. I won't be buried away in a chorus.
Oh, I know it's an opportunity for you, but I need 3 tenors in the choir.
I'll be a sport, will you? It'll only be the one night. Next week we rehearse on Monday.
Well, okay, I'll do it. I'll get along with just 2 tenors on Sunday night. And if anybody asks where you are, I'll say you've got laryngitis.
We're in a spot, Pete. James Melton can't go on tonight.
What?
He's got laryngitis. Can't even talk.
Oh, gee whiz, that's terrible.
Well, can you think of anyone who can take his place? We're on the air in a couple of hours.
Well, let's see. There's no chance of finding anybody with a name at this late date.
Why don't you try Jimmy Carroll? He could do a swell job.
Who?
Jimmy Carroll. You know him. He's in the choir.
I thought you said he was home with laryngitis.
Well, I didn't say that exactly, Fred. I mean, I can reach him if you really want him.
Well, go ahead. Pick up the phone and get him over here.
Well, I can't reach him on the phone, Fred, but I know where he's going to be at 7:45.
Where?
In another studio.
Hey, Take it easy, Pete. I can't just walk out on the rehearsal.
Well, you got it, Jimmy. They're waiting for you over there. Melton can't even speak.
But Ted's got his own show to think about, and if I walk
What's
out on...
What's the matter, Jimmy? Hiya, Pete.
Ted, you've got to help us out of a jam. James Melton can't sing tonight, and they want Jimmy here to take his place right away. It's the chance of a lifetime.
I won't go unless you tell me to, Ted.
Well, you kind of put me on a spot.
Listen, Ted, I lent Jimmy to you tonight, and now I've got to borrow him back.
All right. But you'll have to send me your tenor to take Jimmy's place.
Go on over there, Carter. Go on over right away and take Jimmy's place.
Oh, now, look, Pete. Can't that guy make up his mind? Which show is he going to be on tonight?
This one. He's taking James Melton's place.
Oh, yeah, sure. That leaves the man on third and two runs in.
Oh, look, will you stop kidding and get over there? Jimmy can't go on unless you do.
Okay, Pete, okay. But that'll leave you just one tenor in the chorus.
I wouldn't care if it left none in a spot like this. We can all sing bass.
With only seconds to spare, Jimmy Carroll ran through a dress rehearsal and then pitched right into the program's opening theme as the show went on the air. Immediately afterward, an announcer advised the listening audience that the voice they had just heard was not James Melton's. The rest is radio history. Jimmy's debut was so successful, he was immediately booked for several guest appearances on other shows until his own came along. Now you can hear him every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday night on CBS when Jimmy Carroll sings. And that's Behind the Scenes at CBS. Be with us again next Tuesday night at this time when your favorite Columbia station will bring you another intimate glimpse into the colorful world of radio with, believe it or not, Robert Ripley as our guest and with yours truly, Don Baker, as your guide while Ted Husing spends a week covering the Kentucky Derby. Not so long ago on a broadcast of Ellery Queen, an embarrassing time was had by all when an expensive watch was to be presented to Ellery's guest for the evening, as it is done every week. A few seconds before the valuable timepiece was to be handed over to the guest, Detective Ellery Queen, the man who solves some of radio's most baffling crimes, ran into the most baffling one of them all. The watch was missing. This is Ted Husing saying, good listening.
And this is Don Baker saying, this is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.